Hello and welcome to Dice Punks, a tabletop role-playing podcast where we focus on playing full campaigns in less well-known systems. This week, the Frontispiece 4 and friends deal with some dreamers while a terabyte boy seeks access to the Frontispiece's back room. Hello and welcome. I'm Adam, your friendly neighborhood game master, and joining me are...
Hi, I'm Drew. I'll be playing Cato Burke, a.k.a. Hecate, currently taking a moment, but just a moment, to think about where they are on the number line of how the group feels about violence.
Hi, I'm Robin, and I'll be playing Callisto Armitage, officer by day, revenant by night.
Hi, I'm Dez, and I'll be playing Matchstick, who certainly hasn't caused any problems lately for anybody and is also certainly not hoping that a Ouija board in ternary may produce results.
Hello, my name is Nick, and I will be playing Ing, a droid, android drone operator, and we're about to see how a pacifist fights.
Nice. There are no pacifists in the fist fight.
Well, thank you very much, players. We'll get right into it with our recap of last time, courtesy this time of Matchstick.
So, everyone else was processioning toward the basements with over three in tow. Well, not everyone else. Officer Armitage was on a rooftop discussing things with a copycat revenant or threevenant. There were some revelations there. It turned out also that the hacker that I'd been communicating with in the ellipses of traffic monitoring or camera monitoring turned out to be Allie, so, you know, that at least was fine. Apparently, Allie was working with the copycat, so that bears following up on later. But the crew had some religious troubles on the way to the basement, and Apatia helped solve that with the terrible news of our Lord and Master, Satan. But all of that was made a bit more urgent by the result of damage to the IMX drones being the deployment of everybody's favorite polite spider tank, Kumiko. Folks made it to the basements in time. I reconnoitered with them, hand mirror first, as is the proper way to clear a room before you move into it. At least if you don't have a gun, you shouldn't have a gun. And from there I led us toward an optimal point for what I think we're referring to as a seance at this point. I did bring a Ouija board for that purpose, appropriately in ternary. Cal and I had a conversation en route to that point, which, namely, a disused gallery that was somewhat strewn with debris and definitely hadn't seen people in some time. There was an oversized ventilation shaft that just sort of like, oh, hey, there's some space here. Let's put ventilation there. Great logic. We set about attempting to wake up the dreamer by chanting in Pi, as one does. And that seemed to have at least some effect, as over three started very quietly and then picking up in volume, reciting it along with us. The kitbash remained inert. The problem started when it seemed that the recitation caught the attention of other things. When they came across Ing's drones, cameras, sensors, what have you, they looked like Boston Dynamics dogs with a tentacular spectacular. These, some of us recalled, were what Apatia referred to as leapers. And when they're at about that point, Cal tossed me a gas mask. And then the leapers arrived. We are in the process of falling back. And just as all of that was happening, I got an alert that someone was trying to enter the back parts of the frontispiece, which is not encouraged. And worse, it was one of those fucking terabyte boys.
Thank you very much for that recap. That is precisely where we will pick up, is in this sort of longer than it is wide, cluttered basement space with arguably five dreamers in it, one of which is advancing toward our player characters, another of which has stopped and it's advanced toward our player characters, another of which is currently collecting the other two from where our player characters left them. I believe detail here is that this is an arena, should combat occur, that has bad footing. So combat actions involving movement will take disadvantage. Otherwise, we had established that each of our player characters was in cover and some distance away, that Ing was ready to release biochaff at a moment's notice, this being a countermeasure that was the result of prep. Burn, having attempted to use Laughing Kid to appear as a kitbash.
I forgot to mention that in the recap.
All good, that's why I'm doing it here. We'd had to get detailed about where everything was anyway. Burn had also activated an electromagnetic sort of scanner recorder to try and make sure that whatever communication may be going on between these dreamers was observed and recorded for later analysis. Cal has their riot gear, using the shield to protect Ing and an unconscious Apatia. Burn, as mentioned, has been tossed a gas mask, and Kato is holding the gun in the smaller of their hands and using the larger of their arms defensively. I believe that more or less describes the situation. The last thing that had happened in this room before Burn got the notification about the terabyte boys attempting to access, or I guess terabyte boy singular for now, attempting to access the frontispiece, was that Cal had seemingly gotten mixed success from, like, sort of raising a hand in a stop motion and telling these leapers something to the effect of, "Stop, we are friends of Canopus." So, you know, that echo has died away in the moment that we rejoin this action. I had described the responses of the leapers to that particular round. And so we begin with the ball back in our player characters' courts. Nothing like combat has begun, though one of these leapers is advancing fairly menacingly in your direction. So,
is there anywhere further to retreat to? Can we continue backing off and avoiding combat, or is this a point where we're backed into a corner and it's continue to advance?
You are against one of the longer walls, Ing specifically. Everybody else is a little bit in front of you. You could continue to try to retreat along this wall, like back toward the entrance that you used to get into this room, though, you know, that does have the possibility of resulting in you being cornered as you run out of wall.
I think if retreat continues to be possible, we'll continue to retreat at the point where we are either cornered or the leaper is upon us, I will trigger the biochaff. So let me know if we're at that point.
Not yet, at any rate. Other player character actions. Again, not having to use the combat actions yet, as hostilities have not yet begun.
I would like to continue to ensure that the doors of the frontispiece are locked with the correct people on the fucking outside.
Everything seems to be in order in terms of your sort of control panel, as it were. It does become evident fairly quickly that the terabyte boy in question has given up trying to feed commands to the software, as you are very adept at preventing that. Even without your active attention, your systems are not easy to circumvent. But has instead started trying to essentially use an electromechanic override. He is using rough tools to attempt to access the actual circuitry in the door opening equivalent of hot wiring a car.
I'd like to flip on a light directly at him. I'll also say out or ask out loud whether Cal has anyone they could trust to show up at the frontispiece and scare this chuckle fuck off.
I do. I don't offer any other information outside of that.
if that is something that could be done with moderate expedience, that might be a good thing.
Can we get out of here first?
So in the immediate term, this means that you turn on the light at the terabyte boy in question, and on the video, he drops his hand tools and seems to be swearing and sort of like ducks back out of the light and watches cautiously. You've at least bought some time while he reevaluates.
This may be more time sensitive than a matter of our being here.
Understood. I'm going to drag Apatia and as best I can and continue retreating with the riot shield between me and the leaper.
Okay. And Kato?
How much do I know about what's going on at the frontispiece? Is this just Burn getting pinged?
I would say it's kind of up to you whether or not you get a like automatic live video feed, but at minimum you would have gotten the equivalent of like a mobile OS notification of, you know,
cool,
the door panel at the back being active. You may have gotten okay. More information directly than that. Up to you.
Yep. Fair enough. No, and I'm certainly can get some context from the collaboration, such as it is happening with the group. I maintain a defensive posture, and I do keep the gun trained on, you know, the thing that's most likely to that I'm most likely to need to use it on, the that's closest to us.
Fair enough.
I'll help with dragging Apacia backward.
Sure. You are able to sort of retreat along this wall as the leaper that is advancing sort of like draws within, let's say, 20 feet of your loose group. It slows and sort of has a prowling look to its movement, a cat unsure of whether or not it wants to pounce, and sort of just tracks you along the wall. It does not move to try to get between you and the door that you came in through, at least not yet. The other two, the one that had slowed to a stop, seems the posture that it has is like wolf sniffing the air, but that is pretty abstract in this case. It has no visible sense organs. The other one has used its facial tendrils to lift the kitbash and its back tendrils to sort of strap over three to its back, and is the word loitering is not a great one for what it's doing, but it's the one that came to mind. Hovering, perhaps, in a figurative sense, near the middle of the room, as though waiting for a resolution to the situation before it attempts to remove its passengers from this situation.
Cal, I don't suppose you can use your holo projection armor to project the image of Canopus, could you?
That's a thought. Do we know what the original Canopus looks like?
You did have access to canopus.drs, which does not include, like, a lot of images, but you do at least have, like, a couple of ID pictures and, like, one more personal photo to go off of. You could make a rough approximation from your holographic projection armor in the sort of extemporaneous reconfiguring of it if you wished. It would not fool anybody who was closely familiar with his appearance and think it was him, but it might be recognizable.
I don't think the goal is to make myself appear as Canopus, but someone familiar.
To demonstrate a working knowledge of what he looked like?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A gesture.
So I will do just that. Mm-hmm. I think that'll require me to spend prep. I think we still have plenty of group prep.
You do. I don't have the tally right in front of me. I think that was a running tally that Drew was keeping, if that sounds right.
Yeah, that sounds right. But we currently have 8 group prep.
Okay, good. That makes me feel much more confident in my use of group prep for this, but I will do my best approximation with my HPA.
Yeah, so...
And just to be totally clear, that means we now have 7, right? We had 8
using
before
one. Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, you do a pretty good job on the fly of approximating Canopus's appearance. There's no immediate response from any of the dreamers here, but there is kind of a delayed response in that Over 3 goes from totally inert, no longer even reciting pi, to waving one of its sort of tendrils around, one of its articulated arms around. It emits a mechanical clicking noise that sounds like a broken device attempting to trigger.
If possible, I hasten dragging Apacia.
Sure. So Yeah, you are heading back toward the entrance you used to get in, and are being, I guess, stalked is not the wrong word, by one of these leapers, though it maintains the same distance from you as it goes.
Gently stalked.
Politely stalked, if you will. Mm-hmm.
Escorted out.
Yeah, this can continue apace as sort of a detente until and unless you want something to change or you reach the door.
I think we continue to retreat if people feel comfortable with that.
Yeah, I think there's no particular need to do anything, you know. It's a shame about my Ouija board, but, like, I am getting all of the noises they're making on recording. Is that right, Adam?
Yeah, sounds as well as electromagnetic emissions.
Excellent.
You don't have, like, full spectrum coverage in a literal sense, but you have everything that could reasonably be used to communicate in a purpose-built way covered. If they are adjusting their body temperatures to communicate, you won't catch it. You know, if there's radio or even infrared, if there's light pulses, you know, sub or supersonic or audible sound, visible light, even UV, you'll catch it. Okay. So, as you are nearing the, like, corner where you are gonna go from along one wall to along the wall that meets it at 90 degrees towards the door, Apacia snaps awake, as though suddenly waking from an unpleasant dream. She kind of, you know, eyes snap open, mouth opens, deep breath, and she kind of scrabbles in the kind of position she's been dragged in here.
I attempt to help her scrabble in a position where she can actually move freely, like supporting her by essentially grabbing her by the shirt on her back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you help her kind of to her feet. The leaper that has been tracking your movements, you know, with its own, pauses, and its facial tendrils assume a, how shall I say, configuration you haven't seen it do before. So there's like a bundle of them that are like kind of small, and they move together to a certain point and then sort of flare out, and the movements take place in the flared out portion. And what essentially happens is that the tips of them, which have little lights on them, arrange themselves into a 3x4 grid, kind of equidistant for about a second and a half, trained on Apacia. The closer one, its demeanor, as far as you can tell, changes to high alert. The one that had been moving toward you but had stopped swivels to face you directly, and the other one starts moving towards the other end of the room. Now, this room is not well lit, but we do have, of course, a lot of people for whom that's not an insurmountable problem. And so, as you kind of continue to move, drawing Apacia kind of along with you as she gets her bearings, you do start to hear another set of approaching movements, steps through this ventilation conduit of convenience that the leapers arrived through. This one is less rapid and precise, more, I suppose, the word that the sound would put into the heads of those who would think of a word like this, it would be shambolic. A shambolic movement from this air conduit. As it gets closer, what lights are present in the environment shut off.
Oh, no.
And Apacia turns and looks with sort of like a wild-eyed look at Cal. And this is interesting, of course, because her eyes are artificial. They're augments. And so while the orbits can widen and narrow as normal, because those are still flesh and blood, the actual pupils and irises are essentially down to focal length and light level. But she gives you this wild look and then sort of makes a surprisingly fluid movement for somebody who only just regained consciousness, where she slips out in sort of a sinuous gesture of the part of her clothing that you are holding on to, which I believe amounts to her habit. You were just left holding it by the collar. And she is in like shoes, socks, and sort of like a undershirt and I guess like small clothes, shorts, as she moves without the form but with the commitment of a competitive sprinter. You know, falling forward over her own feet so that she can maintain maximum speed directly towards the part of the room where this ventilation conduit opens up toward. She is moving very certainly despite the lack of light. The leaper close to you turns to follow her progress but does not move to stop her.
And she's moving towards our common exit, or she's moving somewhere else?
She's moving back toward where Over 3 is currently being held on the back of the leaper that has moved the least since its entrance to the room.
Thank you. And follow-up clarification for me. So there's one leaper that had been following us and is now on high alert. There's one leaper that had paused and was moving to the far side of the room. Is that the far side of the room that... Oh, I'm sorry. You're nodding no. Shaking your head.
No, the second one is still between where you are now and where you were when you started hearing them near the middle of the room.
Right.
The third one has started to move toward the far side of the room from the middle where it picked up Over 3.
Okay, and the far side means away from us or towards us?
Away from you.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Happy to clarify.
Shit. I quickly
a fairly concise summary.
Drop the habit and speak into my phone. I imagine I have one of those voice to text shortcuts to Ramirez. I say 1033 MIL 21A R3THX and then hit send, pocket it. And slide the riot shield as best I can to Ing, shouting, "Apacia, come back."
All right. I am going to make an Apacia
roll. I put the gas mask on.
Oh. Excellent. When you shout, "Apacia, come back," she does some kind of physical response that results in her essentially falling over backward. Her feet go from being sort of behind her shoulders to in front of her shoulders, and she hits the ground kind of hard, but in short order is moving much more like a human being would, back in your direction, with a look on her face that is very difficult to categorize. If somebody described it to you as terror, you'd believe it. If somebody described it to you as sort of like grinning ecstasy, you would also believe that. Mm-hmm. And it could be anything in between.
I'm not leaving without you, kid. Get back here. It's not safe.
All right. She picks up the pace as she passes the mostly stationary leaper. The tips of all of its tendrils, facial and back tendrils, sort of like track her as she moves, but they don't move to they don't move to stop her. However, the one that is now between you and her as she sort of moves back in your direction does sort of square up toward her as though it is going to intercept her. While this is happening, you hear the more shambolic movement sort of pause, and then again, real hard to see what's happening, but a large shape sort of falls kind of gracelessly from the ventilation conduit exit that the leapers had used to the area where the remains of the Faraday cage you had been using on Over 3 are resting. It's hard to see even for those of you who have augmented sight, but it's easy enough to get a general shape and a rough count of appendages. This is something that has what could be kind of termed like hips and a torso and something like a long neck. Very approximately, though. There seem to be 4 articulated legs, and it'd be hard to term them arms. They don't come out of shoulders, but rather out of sort of the front of the base of the neck where the collarbone would be on a human. And they are sort of flat, wide, ducted-looking things with little protrusions on the end. That's about all you can really see. The total height is probably 10-ish feet, and it swivels what you have to assume is a head at the end of this neck, sort of jutting forward from where its arm-like appendages are, sort of left and right, kind of taking in the room and settling very quickly on the exact bearing that a patient is on. Actions, reactions, responses.
I mean, my instinct is to ask Cal what the code was, but that was manifestly not the fucking
enormously time. Not the time. As Zing and I can probably still both see each other, I'm giving them a violence look.
Remember, kids, violence is not the answer. It's the question.
Ing thinks it over in a split second, shakes his head, and shouts out to the dreamers, "She's still one of us. Be on your way. Take your own. For all the good that does.
All right.
Did we? I mean, I think I've asked this in a different way, but in looking into how folks communicate with dreamers, is there anything sideways that I learned that might be useful? And this, of course, can be a way to spend prep to de-escalate a quickly escalating situation. Doesn't have to be substantive communication, but just a way to cool things off that may go beyond verbal, speech or shooting them with a gun.
Good question. I guess the thing that I'm going to do is before we subtract any prep, I'm going to have you roll a clever. So +2.
Okay. That's 5 + 2 = 7.
Okay. The issue you're running into here is that the most kind of credible in terms of sourcing and kind of concrete description and frequency of advice is to sort of let them do what they're going to do as a way of de-escalating. But that is kind of not what you want right now.
Not optimal. Yeah, not optimal.
So you pull a more Hail Mary sort of option out of your repertoire here. Do you have a clear idea of whether your speech production tools are vocal cords or something more artificial?
They're going to be more artificial at this point. They are made to mostly resemble human vocal cords, but they're an assemblage of parts. So more machine now than man, woman, etc.
Sure. So, yes, you can spend one prep if you would like to make a sound at a particular pitch and with a particular timbre that you are hoping might be something that will at the very least get these dreamers' attention on you instead of whatever they were attending to before. It is up to you whether you wish to do that, but that is like your...
Yeah, that's what I could do, or at least try to do. As the briefest form of table talk, does that sound useful?
It sounds like an interesting decision.
I mean, maybe. I mean, this is...
I'm very helpful.
The dreamers are
helpful.
Delightfully obscure at this point. You know, what their intentions are, because right now they're just paying attention to Apatia in a way that could be interpreted as hostile, but maybe not.
Yeah. Let's keep that one in the back pocket. I will not spend the prep at this time, okay. But, you know, if I do that, then I will have prepared to do that.
Sure. Yeah. Any other actions?
I'm continuing to just point a gun.
Continuing to retreat.
Player character actions before the dreamers get to take theirs. All right. So the roles we are about to get are for Apatia and the leaper that is tracking her movements most closely between where she is and where you are. Okay. Apatia does run past that dreamer. It is not able to stop her from heading towards you. That does not mean that no contact is made, however. One of its back tendrils, the heftier ones, sort of whips out and clocks her on the shoulder, and she sort of stumbles away from it, seemingly realizes that she's going to go down, and turns it into a surprisingly graceful like roll that seems kind of painful given the detritus on the ground here, but she comes up on her feet, not even losing much speed, and she's now like on your side of the last dreamer that was between where you are and where she was, running toward you with a look on her face of combined confusion and probably not like terror, but certainly fear. The dreamer, for its part, the leaper, turns to follow her, but does not make moves. In fact, as she gets further away from it, it backs toward its compatriots, including the big weird one that has not moved very far from where it was.
Everybody get out of here. I have my hand propped on my gun and the universal I will draw this but I don't want to posture, and I am waving Apatia and past me towards the exit as I also start to retreat.
As she gets closer to where you are, she leans down to scoop up her discarded habit and then races past you into the passage. Other characters' actions here in regards to exiting this room.
Hopefully we can chat again soon.
Biochaff is ready. Say the word, but I'm worried that this will escalate things rather than resolve it. Back off.
Yeah, I'm not sure what resolution really looks like at this point, other than, you know,
getting the hell out of here.
Fucking off, I was going to say, yeah.
Less talking, more moving.
All right.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I talk the same amount, but I do move.
Everybody has made it into the passage leading back the way you came at this point. The dreamers do not seem inclined to follow you, you know, further out of this room.
What? Any updates on the terabyte boy?
Not a whole lot of time has passed, but looking back at the camera feed, you can see that he has sort of skulked back toward the door along the wall and is beginning to work on the access panel a little more carefully than before, but still doing so. Cal, when next you check in on your communications, you will have a reply to your emergency code. That is rather troubling. It reads, Tupper preventing deployment.
I would like to try to hack the terabyte boy remotely, if that's possible. Since the Chucklefuck has tried to access my systems.
Mm-hmm. So, you're trying to, like, get into his devices while he works?
Okay. Oh, yeah. Get his information, files, anything likely connecting him to the instrumentalities of what's actually going on with this.
Sure. I'm making this attempt while we're still in pretty imminent physical danger, at least potentially. It's very you, let the record show.
Whatever. Like, I'm just going for a walk in the basement.
So, Burn... Do roll hacking first, and then we'll get to ghosting a little bit later, but do so with disadvantage. So you're rolling 3d6 and taking the lowest two.
Okay. So I rolled a 6, 5, 4. So that is 9 becomes, I think, 16.
Sounds about right. Yeah, this is because it's hard to, you know, run full speed and use your interface at the same time. You begin running some routines on his wirelessly enabled devices. He does not notice as he is currently using hand tools on the panel. It will take a little time since you are not doing the interfacing actively because you need to use hand-eye coordination to like move, but you have some tools that will work on it while you run.
Okay.
Remind me when we check back in to get the ghosting roll from you at that time.
Yeah.
Okay. Once
and obviously for you know anyone else out of characters notice there's one of these situations that is far more pressing. And it's not
everyone here agrees. It's we just may disagree about which one.
Yep.
Yeah.
I will make a brief note that I'm leaving my drones in the room with instructions to act as though they don't exist and are part of the scenery.
Fair enough.
Taking in video audio.
Yeah,
I just pictured one behind a potted plant. I know that's not the image.
We carried the potted plant that got socked down into the basement.
It's a member of the party now.
I was going to say, I'm picturing them hiding behind a potted limb.
Oh, yes. The arm missing the hand.
Practical uses of flesh horticulture. Mm-hmm.
I would love to get a clever plus robotics roll from you, please.
Okay.
2d6 plus 6.
That is a 6 and 4, so total of 10 plus 6 is 16.
Okay. You give your drones these instructions. They sort of, you know, make themselves unobtrusive. This may be a decent time to flesh out slightly your interface with these drones. I think we have established that it is essentially, I mean, not literally a neural link, since you don't have, like, neurons, per se, but that you have sort of a real-time in OS sort of interactive application layer with them. This is partially automated by the Murgatroyd sort of swarm setup that you have going, that they have some autonomy. So you don't have to, you know, adjust rotor speeds or anything, you know, but you sort of monitor them and issue commands. Essentially the way that, you know, I like move my hands while I'm talking. So, Ing, you are aware, more or less as soon as it happens, when the big mysterious dreamer that arrived later starts advancing on Tran. It isn't just moving toward Tran. It appears to have zeroed in on Tran.
No.
Okay. Tran is currently in the guise of a moth and has a villainous mustache.
I love Tran.
Tran the Mothman.
So do we all.
Me too. What do I do? I instruct Tran to be brave, hold their ground, and the safest thing sometimes is to freeze. No motion towards, no motion away, just a piece of the furniture.
Tran sees where Tran is. This allows you more information on the thing that is coming towards Tran. And this is probably good for you, if not necessarily for Tran, because you can see sort of what this thing is, looks like. Unclear. The four legs, and we'll call them arms, you can see now, thanks to Tran, that the arms are sort of extendable. I think of, like, the dryer exhaust ducting. But
not gonna lie, I was about to say, like Gumby.
Less like Gumby. But instead of aluminum, some sort of polymer cloth covering, quite long, they as you watch, have reached all the way to the floor. Their little tips are sort of little grabby fingers, it looks like. You also get a look at its head, which is gives you the idea maybe of some like deep sea life, perhaps. It's got these thin cord tendrils that seem to have some sort of prehensile movement that sort of makes them hard to count, and a weirdly alien looking interface on the ends of them. You can also tell, though, that the head is not actually where the sensory inputs are. Those actually appear to be scattered throughout its body. As it approaches Tran, though, it gets to within about 10 feet, you lose contact with Tran.
Okay. What do the sensors from my other drones tell me about the situation as it stands now.
Yeah, so the other the other drones are observing this thing move toward Tran, and it seems like it hasn't done anything. Tran has maybe entered some sort of field that it's putting out. And you see through your other drones, Tran start to move and sort of use its locomotion to alight upon the top of this thing and seemingly power down. The two leapers that aren't carrying the Kitbash and Over 3 start moving toward the areas where your other drones are located. They are not hidden. These things can detect them.
I back the others off slowly at first and then more quickly if they continue to approach.
As your remaining drones speed up, the leapers that were sort of advancing on them stop and seem to observe their departure. As those other drones leave the gallery coming towards you, they can see Tran sort of flutter up off of the thing and start moving away from it. After Tran hits the extent of that field, it comes back online.
Okay.
You now have connection and control again where Tran is concerned.
Okay. I set Tran to do a quick kind of systems check. And I would like to just back the drones off to the point where they stop being pursued rather than necessarily exit. But exit if, you know, there's continued advance.
They stop being pursued when they exit the room.
Then they exit.
Yeah. Tran's diagnostic runs for about a third of the time that it usually does and comes back all green.
It's tremendously reassuring. Okay.
By this point, the four of you and Apatia have moved a couple of chambers down from the one where you encountered these dreamers. Word, as it were, from Ing's drones are that the dreamers are not exiting the room, though you have lost track of what exactly is going on in the room as the drones retreat. Apatia moves sort of with your group, but it only takes a glance in her direction to see that her face is kind of grimly set and she has begun to cry. The Terabyte Boy is getting frustrated with the door interface at the frontispiece, but has managed to get the outer casing of it off. The
Adam?
Yes?
Can I spend prep to have booby-trapped the interior of the casing?
Booby-trapped
as a general, something that would defeat the attempt to use the casing to open the door by fusing it in an off position. We have other ways of getting in. Something on that order. In a fairly showy fashion.
This question, it's fine, Kato, if you answer it retrospectively, given your current knowledge, but
would you have
allowed something that you would have signed off on?
An eyebrow would have been raised, but yeah, I would have allowed that.
Okay.
I guess it's the kind of, to characterize it a little, it's the kind of thing where I would have figured I could allow it, or it could happen anyway in a possibly more dangerous way.
You're not wrong.
Honestly, pretty fair. So as this
How to Parent a Gremlin
gets the casing off of the control panel to get into the back room of the frontispiece, there is essentially a small thermite reaction that triggers.
Also, like flash photography.
Yeah, in terms of how it's set up, it actually is based on phosphorus, but, you know, it has...
I mean, you need phosphorus to do thermite anyway, so...
So, yeah, this results in the rapid kind of pulling back of limbs, the dropping of tools, the loud of swearing, unfortunately, it also results in the camera feed going wonky for about 10 seconds while the light kind of messes with the automatic settings and pixelates the compression. But when it comes back, the terabyte boy is sort of like sitting beneath it, like shaking his hand and trying to collect his tools, muttering what is pretty clearly like a short code phrase into some vein of communication.
Okay.
At this point, it has become relatively clear that the dreamers are not going to immediately pursue you out of this room. You have a little bit of distance on them. Ing, do you want your drones to hover at the entrance to the room where the dreamers are, or to continue to retreat toward you?
I will have them hover at the entrance.
They are able to detect movement in the room, but the dreamers have deployed some kind of countermeasure that the best way you can describe it is it's kind of like if you took all the cables on a soundboard and plugged them into other places on the same soundboard. It's just like noise. The actual movements are in there somewhere, but it would be like weeks of work to filter them out. Blunt, but shockingly effective. Not the kind of thing that you are aware of any individual or commercial like software or approach being able to do in real time.
Okay.
This presents an opportunity as you have lookouts in the forms of Ink's drones and have put some distance and you kind of have another thing going on at the frontispiece to regroup a little bit, if you wish.
All right. Well, we could send the drones after them, but that seems like a deliberate provocation. They've, made as clear as they can, I suppose, that they don't want to be followed. So I'd suggest that we back off.
That we respect those wishes. Yeah.
Apatia pulls her habit over her head so that her face is clear of the collar. Goes,
I think that keeping our distance is a good idea.
What happened with you there, if that's a question that's all right to ask?
I would tell you if I knew. I will be thinking about it, and if I figure anything out, I'll share it with you all. You deserve to know. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, no.
Nothing to apologize for. I'm glad you got out safe. That's all.
Right.
Have a first aid kit if you need one.
Check the logs of your augments when you get a chance. Because it seems like you may have had a variation on... Actually, no, I can't say any of this because I don't know what happened with Tran.
Mm-hmm. You can at least
so
get...
strike those. Yeah,
well, we could have shared it.
Check the logs on your augment. At which point. She'll actually say, I could probably use your help with that when you have
time. I know how to access them, but I'm not great at interpreting them.
Yeah, I'm usually the software guy, so this would be within my ambit. Yes, Adam? No?
It's something that you could at least muddle through. You know, if she can get you the information, you know how to parse information, or at least you can figure out how, given a long enough timeline.
You would have to ask me a question, or worse yet, Gorister, but, you know.
I'd have to ask you a question.
Like I said.
I say to the group, by the way, it's probably safest to assume that everything that we're saying now is something that the dreamers, if they're capable of hearing and understanding, probably do. I'll get into it later, but I think that Tran just learned how to lie. Tran was subsumed into the energy field of the dreamers and was briefly out of touch with the swarm. But when it came back in contact, I asked it to do an update, and it did a very, very quick update, quicker than it usually does. Says all clear, but that's suspicious to me. I think that it's a deliberate lie.
Well, congratulations on the advancement of your drone, but also, that's a thing.
Worrisome and impressive in equal measure, yeah.
My feelings exactly. I'm proud and more than a little scared.
I scowl at Tran.
Tran scowls back.
His mustache.
And googly eyes.
For our listeners, the part of my humor here is that I believe it is a like direct Cecil Palmer quote from Night Vale. I am proud and terrified. So my constant movement of all settings toward Night Vale.
You're not the only
campaign.
One in this podcast, so
it exerts a gravitational force.
I am usually the culprit in this in our recordings, but yeah,
probably. And to be fair, it is also a constant move of all settings toward Fallen London, because there is significant overlap in the vibe. Of those two settings, if not the details.
Why, yes.
So.
Things are weird and terrifying, and it's honestly kind of okay.
Yeah. During this little exchange, Burn, and I guess if you happen to be looking at it, Kato, you will see Gorister come back to the back door of the frontispiece and see the Terabyte Boy putting tools in his pockets. And this promises to be a decent spectator sport if you do not intervene.
Fuck him up.
I mean, we'll keep.
I actually text sure. Gorister this.
Kato, any input?
I have resigned myself to watch the ball roll down the shaft, which knocks the bottle, which makes. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
This Rube Gorister machine, if you will,
if you will, and apparently we must.
So, other things can be happening in your vicinity while this happens, but essentially, Gorister wordlessly approaches the Terabyte Boy, producing a sizable wrench from somewhere and acting quite menacing with it. The Terabyte Boy scrambles in a seated position away from him and out of the camera's field, and Gorister follows. The sound that this particular camera picks up and transmits is very directional, because you're in a relatively busy college district, and if not, you'd be getting sound all the time. But you do hear a couple of what sound like pleas, and then some yelps, and then Gorister comes back into frame with a sort of Judge Dredd frown on his face. And
I snap a picture of that.
And you simultaneously hear some footfalls moving away.
And ping Kato with, he should get overtime for that alone.
Gorister goes to use the access pad to get into the back door of the frontispiece, sees that it has been fused, and wails on it with his wrench about 8 or 9 times before leaving the viewpoint of this camera.
He knows the other ways in.
He does. He's just frustrated. And he goes around to the front. In the meantime,
how much of this did you share with the group?
I'm assuming Burn probably none. Kato?
Oh, I think with extreme glee after Gorister comes back into frame, I will say, I think the Terabyte Boy has been handled.
Did he detain him? Could have been a bounty.
It was Gorister in the alleyway with a wrench.
Everyone's alive. Nobody's detained.
Disappointing.
More say it was optimal.
Well, Gorister's our hardware guy, but not necessarily like wet work.
I mean, he's got a future, at least in intimidation, I think. If he wants it.
Does have the advantage of just being like a big dude. Who's usually
and silent.
Unhappy
people
about
find
something.
That terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Big unhappy people are naturally a little scary.
Well, that's 2 crises averted, although no bounty, and I'm not sure we learned anything.
What did I get off his phone?
Yes. First off, go ahead and make that ghosting roll for me.
Yeah. Also a disadvantage?
No, because you're actually turning your attention to it.
Cool. That is a 17.
Okay. Yeah, you pick up where your automated systems left off, and cover your tracks. What you immediately perceive is that this particular Terabyte Boy is flunky at best.
But were there contact numbers?
It takes you a second. But one of the unsaved contacts does have elliptical but not coded language directing him to go do this. And each of the first couple of messages begins with PSSST:.
Mm-hmm. I will scour them for any sort of viral content, zip the files, and assuming they are clean, and drop them onto the dark side of Cal's phone.
It is done.
What's Tepper's first name? Lou. That's Lou. Right. Never mind.
Yeah, but what's his rank? Sergeant?
No, he is the owner of PSS. I think we settled on him having given himself the title of chief.
So, assuming there is no viral content, I'll drop those onto Cal's phone and turn to the officer and just, you've got mail.
Anything else has been going on during this little interlude remotely at the frontispiece? Anything anybody else has been getting up to? Apatia realized that she was crying and starts scrubbing her tears away. Ing?
Yeah, I'm keeping an eye on her and, you know, not in a suspicious way, but to see what she needs. You know, offer a comforting pat on the back or, you know, that kind of thing.
Sure. Give me a clever roll, please. That's okay. +3 for you.
Well, thank you. That is 5 plus what did you say? 3?
3.
Okay, 8.
Yeah, she seems to take comfort in the attention and the physical contact. She's sort of like scrubbing the tears off of her face and trying to center herself a little bit. She has already agreed to have Burn go kind of through her augments logs, but you know, when you're a little more safe. But she seems to be inclined to try to explain what was happening verbally in the current moment. And so she doesn't, she's not 100% coherent, but she starts to say, like, I was fine. The basements gave me trouble at first, but, and then there was some kind of buzzing and I tried to ignore it, but all of a sudden I just dissociated, I guess. I didn't feel like I was really connected to my body, and there was a feeling of, I don't know if euphoria is the right word, but something that got stronger as I got closer, but then something broke it. And she looks at Cal and she's, I think it was you, and I shouldn't have come. This was, I'm too big a risk. But it was the closest I've gotten.
You're a risk. I think you are at risk.
I point at Burn.
She makes kind of like a equivocating agreement gesture with her head.
That's one of the reasons that I think that it's a good idea to check the logs of your augments and possibly see what can be done that will require Gorister, probably, to harden them against subversion.
She nods, but she sort of just carries on verbally from where she was. She says, I think it was the closest I've gotten to the sensation I was trying to rediscover. Perhaps if you'd let me go, I'd have gotten there, but I don't necessarily think that would have been a good thing. So thank you. She looks, I guess, to use the Dark Souls lingo, crestfallen.
I'm just glad you came back. I wasn't going to leave until you were safe.
I appreciate that. And she gives you a shaky smile.
Let's get you back topside. We'll figure things out from there.
She just nods and kind of like visibly steals herself. Not that we have to start moving in earnest right this instant, but it occurs to me that it's probably a good question to ask. Are we retracing our steps to the same basement entrance that we used to get
Absolutely
in?
Absolutely, we're not.
I figured. So, in that...
I am leading with the hand mirror.
Mm-hmm. In that case... Let's see. Burn, if you would give me a, let's say, clever plus stealth roll, which is going to be plus 7, because you get plus 1 to rolls related to basement activities.
That is an 18.
All right. You lead the way, and...
Sadly, that is not doubles.
Sadly, indeed. To be clear, you can continue to have conversations and interactions during this, but just to set the backdrop, Burn leads the way through the room that you initially entered the basements from, beyond it to some other sub-Selden district areas before you emerge from the basements. During that time, if there's anything in particular you wish to cover, do, converse about, etc., this would be the time to let me know.
Go ahead.
I take up a second position as soon as the mirror comes out with my weapon drawn, ready mm-hmm. to clear the room or assist in clearing the room in a more literal sense as need be.
Mm-hmm. Anything else for the duration of the journey?
Do you check your mail?
Oh, I do. For sure. I probably verbalize at some point that it seems like it might be Tupper.
Mm-hmm.
There's a hopeful note to my voice.
Makes sense to me.
There's at least one number that was giving orders, so you may have better resources than I to trace it.
I'll hop on it.
There were several other, you know, no contact identification, but like all communication is data for this that may be worth tracing.
And to just sort of get it on record, you do have other information about this Terabyte Boy's communication, at least with his wireless devices. This is just the most interesting thing for the particular circumstances that you're in. This could, you know, with some research, also help lead you to like other Terabyte Boys or mapping out their organization to an initial extent, at least. It's just, you know, not a thing you can do while commuting, so to speak.
Right. Yeah.
As we make our way back, I will string out my drones in front of us and behind us to just keep an eye out for pursuers and dangers ahead.
Good deal. Are you including Tran in this?
Yes, I will have Tran not be on either extreme, but somewhere in the middle of the group.
Yeah, no particular aberrations in Tran's behavior or functionality.
Mm-hmm.
At least so far. Dun, dun, dun.
Tran is suddenly terrifying. Tran the terrifying Mothman.
Tran the terrible. Anyway.
Has Tran become like a creepypasta now?
That is...
Is it contagious?
That remains to be seen.
Yeah, I think that both of those are possible.
The mustache would suggest that pasta is especially possible.
This is the drone.
When the drone hits your eye. Thank you.
And it recites pi.
Beautiful.
No notes.
Anything else in particular while we are making our way out of the basements?
Sounds like a no.
All right. Good deal. Eventually, then, you will emerge from the basements not that far from Izakaya Po'boy, on sort of that side near the edge of Selden District. You know, Burn is aware that this particular entrance is not directly surveilled, so everybody can kind of pile out, which is good because everybody's ready to get out of the basements. Then you can decide how you're getting to where you're going, whether everybody's going back to the frontispiece or not, once you are out of the basements.
I require repair. I'm not going to bring it up in front of Apatia, but I am heading back to the frontispiece.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I have to explain where two punctures appeared from in my arm for stuff I don't actually own.
I picture Cal talking to some official at PSS with just the flattest, least convincing affect and being like, it's personal. But it does seem like a better idea to have Gorister look at it. So Cal's headed back to the frontispiece. I assume that Kato and Burn are headed back to the frontispiece. Bing?
I turn to Apatia before we go our separate ways and say, Apatia, I don't think that it's a good idea for you to be on your own tonight. If you've got someone that you trust to stay with you, then that's great. If not, I suspect that we can find some space between us. I could be wrong, but it seems like this fugue state that you are under, the dreamers were gathering and collecting their own, and I think that your losing control or wandering towards them was a part of that, that part of you is like them. I don't know that that state has faded. So that's where this is coming from.
Her bottom lip quivers a little bit, but she takes a deep breath and she says, that actually sounds really helpful. Are you volunteering to keep me company?
I look at Cal.
I nod.
Yeah, you can stay with us tonight. Got a spare bed.
She nods enthusiastically.
Yeah, Ing doesn't sleep on his.
Yeah.
And I don't think that Cal knows
character,
that.
Cal looks at you with absolute confusion and then just decides you're giving up the futon where you clearly sleep.
Apatia is already nodding enthusiastically by the time she says, if you're sure it's no trouble.
No trouble. Shake my head.
She gives you a mock salute. Following you then, Commander Ing.
Right. Off with you. Let's go.
Sometimes I regret not grafting the Unknown Army's stress meter system into every system. Because I feel like getting saluted and addressed by a military rank probably was not pleasant for Ing.
Nope.
Self-check?
So, Ing and Apatia peel off toward Cal and Ing's place. Everyone else heads back to the frontispiece.
I'm glad she's staying somewhere, and I'm glad it's not a place that was, you know, recently besieged, albeit unsuccessfully.
Actually, that's a really good point. On the way to the frontispiece, Cal, you will get a private text message from Ramirez that tersely explains that Tupper was unusually specific that no responses were to be made to calls coming from the frontispiece today.
I immediately share that information mm-hmm. with the squad before responding to Ramirez with the poop emoji.
He gives you the pointing upward emoji.
I would like to burn this man's life down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least that gives us some information about who's behind the Terabyte Boys. If it leads to just as many questions as answers.
I mean, means we have an adversary who's pretty well connected, but also an idiot leading.
Yeah, an enormous chuckle fuck.
Yeah, so beats the alternative, I guess.
Welcome to my life.
I heard that in the tune of the Simple Plan song. I'm very sorry to everybody who received psychic damage for having to think about Simple Plan.
Dice Punks is not responsible for any psychic damage incurred for Simple Plan.
In due time, Ing and Apatia make it back to Cal and Ing's apartment, and the rest of you make it back to the frontispiece, entering through the front door to find that you can hear Gorister swearing at something from the back room from the front door.
I motion for Cato to go first.
I go first. Everything okay in here?
Gorister throws his wrench down on his workbench and says, "Yeah, it's fine. Just Weasel got away before he cave his skull in."
Weasel? Describe the weasel. Give me some detail.
I will ping both of your phones with a picture of the terabyte boy.
This weasel, yeah?
He just nods.
The weasel in question.
Yeah, Gorister just nods.
I mean, that would have been just, would have created other problems, and I think you did a pretty good job.
I was rooting for you.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, we were all rooting for you.
Yeah, could have been a bounty.
He
right, so
smacks his forehead and goes, "I didn't even think about that. God damn. Ugh, I'm going to have to fix that, you know."
I know. Look, if you didn't think you were getting overtime for your discretion and threatening to cave in a skull but not actually caving it in, you're most certainly getting it both for that and for fixing the damn thing, so thanks.
I'll help re-rig it. I will offer a winning gremlin smile.
Waves in a appreciative but also somehow desultory way.
The good and the bad news is it sounds like you might get another chance too.
Lucky me. Cal, were you saying something?
I was not, but if there is an organic pause in the conversation, I may interject with, and speaking of fixing things, how difficult do you think this will be to repair? I can't afford to lose the augments that are on loan.
Gorister gives you an unreadable look and then looks down at your Ogvert arm and goes, it doesn't seem like it got too much into the actual circuit board, so I replace a couple capacitors and give you a new veneer. I'll try to match it as much as I can. It's an afternoon's work, more than I'd like to do for this kind of repair, but these Ogverts are not meant to be end-user repaired, so... He looks at Cato and goes, "If I'm getting paid, it's on the house."
"You're getting paid."
"I thought so. It's on the
house." I look at Cal and say, "This economic arrangement has gotten stranger and stranger, but that's okay."
"Well, I appreciate it.
If we're all safe-ish and we're all eating, the rest doesn't matter that much."
Gorister gives a tight smile and then turns back to what he was doing on his workbench, which appears to be some kind of personal project. If you can imagine somebody building a prosthetic hand from just below the knuckles up out of an erector set, that's kind of what it looks like.
I visibly have just so many questions.
And Gorister just as visibly ignores you. Gorister does casually ask, "Any word from Bronwy?" "Haven't seen her since the parade." He makes the air quotes around the word parade audible.
I think in point of fact, we have not had word from Bronwy.
Indeed not.
No.
That's a good point. We've had some problems of our own, but should check in.
He nods. He says, "Cat's gone too."
Shit. I think I try getting in touch with Bronwy. We have a secure channel to reach out directly, if I recall.
You get an auto reply, like an out of office kind of thing, except instead it reads, let me try to think of the exact wording here. It reads, "I'm out of the workshop right now, but I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Probably there's a reason for it."
Oh, that's
kind of witchy and completely unhelpful, so.
Where did you last see her?
Professor says, she was running interference with that weird nutcase. Then she kind of sort of made eye contact while I was rounding the corner behind the cargo bike. And that was the last I saw of her. She seemed fine. The guy was already stomping off. But
what street?
He gives you the name of the street, which accords with, you know, kind of the spot in the progression of the cargo bike that she had gone to run interference during.
I pull up camera feeds from the relevant time.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm able to.
So the relevant time was, you know, after close of business, so kind of dying down rush hour. And I mean, you could see her sort of interacting with this guy who gets angrier and angrier, and he sort of lingers for a moment and then stomps off in one direction. Bronwy sort of grins after him. You get your last communique from her while she's like on camera there, and then she goes off in the other direction. That last communique, I didn't do word for word on Mike last time, but it was essentially like reporting that she had successfully extricated herself from the situation with the religious nutcase, and was, in her words, gonna lay low. If you leave it, Ing, to Apatia, then the two of you will travel to your and Cal's apartment in relative silence, although, you know, not a strained one. If there is anything that you wish to speak with her about on the way, then that is fine. Just let me know. Otherwise, we will pick up with you arriving in the apartment.
Yeah, that works.
Okay. Apatia has not seen, if I'm not mistaken, your apartment before, because Bronwy had come to the dinner, but Apatia had not. Mm-hmm. So, upon entering, she looks around, sees Hand, and goes, "Oh, wow, is that real?"
"Absolutely. It's my pride and joy. You know, requires some close attention, but it's rewarding to see it thrive."
Yeah, by the time you finish saying all that, she has not touched it, not gestured like she was going to touch it, but she has gotten real close in sort of like visually inspecting Hand, you know, inches away. When you wind down, she says, "I've never seen anything like it. That is so weird and cool."
Yeah,
very,
I mean,
engrossed.
You and I share fascination with technology and all that it can bring, but there's a certain beauty to the biological form that, especially never having had one before, I find that it's got its own kind of, I don't know, ephemeral beauty to it. Some people like bonsai trees, and I don't know, this seems more personal, if you'll pardon the double meaning.
By the time you finish talking, she has raised her right arm to try to sort of like match the pose that Hand is in. And she says, "Person. Yeah, no, that's really cool. I appreciate the statement that it makes about biological versus mechanical life, too." She sort of straightens up and looks around the apartment. She says, "So the futon is yours?"
"Tonight, the futon is yours. It does happen to be in the room that I've been using, but to be honest, even if I don't have a guest, I don't tend to sleep on it. I have a different cycle entirely, and it doesn't really require lying down."
"Huh. I get it. Maybe it's just the meat talking, but it does seem kind of sad. I feel like there's a certain almost a certain psychological utility, if you'll allow me to use approximate terms, to having a designated, dare I say, sacred place for rest.
Hmm.
Though maybe that's just an organic thing.
No, I've got my preferred corner of the room to stand in. And the room itself is a place of respite for me, but I've got my own associations with lying down, and they're not always peaceful.
Hmm. I suppose I can identify with that. She sort of looks away, looking thoughtful, and seems to reach a decision. She turns to you somewhat decisively, and she says, "You know, initially I tried to find people that I could trust to look at the augments that I received from what I think was a dreamer as a child. I tried to have them analyzed. Best case scenario, no one could tell me what they did. But I think I might know now. And, well, my best guess is that they give something entirely other an entry point into my nervous system. I don't know how many humans have had that experience, but I imagine that..." And at this, she sort of like looks up to hold eye contact with you, and she says, "I imagine that more androids have had that experience than humans. I don't want to presume, but what does that mean for me?"
"That is an excellent question. There are actually a lot of people in the android rights movement that are asking the very same question, albeit coming from a different angle. I mean, all of us AIs of the current generation were purpose-built to be tools, to be agents of another, not even another person's will, but another corporation's will, an aggregate puppet, but a useful one, because we can think. I'm genuinely sorry to hear that the purpose of this augment, these augments, seems to be something similar. But resistance, at least for us, is possible. Where there's thought and will, there is the possibility of opposition."
While you're talking to her, her jaw sort of works with a closed mouth, and she listens intently and then sort of makes a little half laugh and says, "You know, the way you describe it being created as a tool for an aggregate sounds awfully similar to the reasons that my parents wanted kids."
Mm. Yeah.
"On the one hand, I don't want to risk losing control over my body again. On the other hand, I can't help but think that these augments, well, they make me something of a... they give me an advantage in interfacing with dreamers, don't they?"
"I think that they might."
"I need to know... I need to know what happened to me. I need to be able to not just understand the what, but the why. And I don't think that's going to be possible without coming into contact with them again. Perhaps next time it will just be best to let it go. I could go by myself. And whatever they wanted with me, they could get."
"Let's give it some thought. and maybe start with getting you settled, keeping you safe. And if that's a path that you want to pursue, let's talk about a lifeline, a way to come back. I am not eager to put myself in the clutches of my creators. And I'm not sure that the answers are worth everything that you are.
Those are good thoughts. I know it's not really late, but I think maybe I just want to lie down. And, well, this may be untoward, but I know you don't usually use the futon. I do think, though, that if, well, you would lie down with me, it would be nice for me, at least. You don't, I'm not.
I'd be happy to.
She gives you a wan smile and says, thank you. And
I'm,
go ahead.
I'm sorry that you've been used and that you're afraid and hurting. And I'm sorry that I feel many of the same things. I'm glad that we feel those things together.
Yeah, I suppose if there's anything to be glad about, it's that, but I'd be gladder to try and make it so that it didn't happen anymore, you know?
Absolutely. We'll search for some answers tomorrow.
She nods, and by this time she's sort of nodding next to you as the two of you sort of, you know, take up casual positions on the futon. She's not, like, attempting to snuggle exactly, though you're not far apart.
Mm-hmm.
And as she sort of closes her eyes and turns her attention inward, she murmurs, I've heard people refer to androids as cold metal before, but in my experience, you're all actually quite warm. And that's where we'll end our session.
Very wholesome.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all the cliffhanger I was expecting.
Not all of them very end wholesome. Up having to be cliffhangers.
Very wholesome. Mild trauma.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mild. So I think that we're going to give everybody 2 XP.
Ooh.
Ooh.
One mission related and one goal related. In the course Hooray! Of the mission. So 2 to everybody.
My attempts to adjust it to 2 just, or add 2 resulted in me just typing 2 again.
Yep, I understand that perfectly. But with that, I think we're ready to say that this concludes this session of Dice Punks. Thanks for joining us. I hope our players and listeners enjoyed it as much as I did, and that you all join us again next time. If you're hearing us now, then you probably know where to listen to us, but we can be found almost any place one can listen to podcasts, as well as on the wider web at dicepunks.com, and on Tumblr and Blue Sky as @dicepunks. With that, I think we're ready to say farewell. So say goodbye to the kind folks back on Earth, players.
Thanks for listening. It's 11:31. Do you know where your witch friend is?
Thank you for listening, everyone. Sometimes it's not the why that matters so much as the who.
Thanks for listening, folks. And even though you really, 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 really don't want to, sometimes it is better if the weasel gets away.
Well, thank you for listening to our podcast. Now get ready for the pod counterspell.
That's exactly where I was hoping that would go.
Marvelous. And as the poet once said, It's so weird. It's a mystery to me. He's so weird. He's a mystery to me. She's so weird. She's a mystery to me. It's all so weird. It's a mystery to me. Beloved listeners, thank you for tuning in. Stick around through the admin stuff for more of Luke's lies. The music in this episode, Augment or Die, is by Emerson Boatwright and our very own bookmonger Drew. Check out their other work at the link in the show notes. Editing and our rad new cover art was done by Joanne, who is pure podcast now and again. Check out her work around the internet where she goes by Anything Sews. Site design and graphics for DicePunks.com are by the one and only Officer Armitage, Robin. Hardwired Island is by Paul Matyevich, Freya Erling's daughter, and Minerva McJanda. Find Hardwired Island at etten.itch.io/hardwiredisland. Links to the system and authors can be found on the Punk or More section of our website, dicepunks.com. Thanks so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, that's reward enough on its own. But if you're so inclined, you can help us out by rating and reviewing us wherever you listen to us, telling your friends who you think would like us to give us a listen, and even by heading over to our Patreon at patreon.com/dicepunks. We have fun rewards available to backers, including a patron-only Discord and access to the Dice Peaks after show for episodes 1.1 and following. Regardless, we hope you'll tune in again, and until then, remember, subtlety is for cowards.
It's not actually hard, it turns out, to fake your death. Especially if you're in, shall we say, exciting times. Just go missing for long enough. Maybe change how you look a bit, or leave behind some things that people consider life essential to them or to their impression of you. Either works. Maybe salt some databases with statements that you've not been seen since, well, some time. Alternatively, you could tie records of your death to the death rightly taken up by another body, but that's stealing. People should have a right to their death, especially in chaotic times. Injustice is stored in bodies and in the memories of names. So maybe don't use this easiest of outs. No, what's hard is to keep on living after you've faked your death. Governments require so many different flavors of identification, each of which are usually fairly thoroughly backstopped by hard copy documents. Well, not hard copy in space, because paper is shockingly dense. In an ideal world, you don't establish these things in person, because then you'd be on record as having done so at a particular time and place, and that's traceable. All in all, becoming a proficient hacker very quickly is the correct answer to continuing to live while having faked your death, because person or persons unknown stole, well, let's not get into that. We're talking about your continued life after faking your death. So you made a good decision coming to talk to me. In the absence of becoming a proficient hacker, then your next best choice is seeking out the best one you can find and/or afford. Let's get to it, shall we?